Get ready to hear an epic story, then be told a much different version of the same epic story, then be told the same story again with further revisions. It's easily the best three drafts you'll ever see in only 99 minutes. It's called Hero, and it was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
My name's Sean Collier. The podcast's name is The Number One Movie in America. Here are two witches. Call out which one you are. It's Robin Hitchcock.
Earth, 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 Earth.
And Camila Adams.
Wind? Is that wind?
You know, it really occurred to me that we missed a major opportunity in not bringing in a guest because we needed our fourth.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Damn.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah.
That's what kind of Mickey Mouse operation are we running here? Like, what is
really?
We should have brought
Clive back. It's not as though we don't know.
Ah!
Right. Oh, it's got to be somebody new. We would have had to hang around a high school or mall. No, wait, now it's getting weird. The point is, we know plenty of people who love the craft. You know, universal acclaim. No one with a crossword to say. That was fun. That was just like one of those pure joy episodes, wasn't it?
Yeah, they're great when we come across them. At least it wasn't like, you know, the pure joy of collectively hating a film.
Which is a different kind of joy.
Right.
And a valid kind of joy. But it's nice to like things, and we do like the craft, so much so that it is now our eighth overall movie.
Wow.
At 82 and a third, it is officially tied with Aliens. Camila breaks that tie with the highest individual score for either movie. There's the 89 that Camila gave The Craft. So outranks Aliens by one. Toy Story 4 is now bounced from the top 10. Our current top 10, Alien, Pulp Fiction, Speed, Ocean's 11, The Fugitive, PR. What did I abbreviated them too much. What's PR? Purple Rain. Purple Rain. 7. Still in 7th, by one spot.
Right?
Came close.
That was close.
Then The Craft, Aliens, and Coming to America is now the bottom rung of the top 10 ladder. Good job, The Craft. 8th overall.
I like that list. That's a good top 10.
Me too. I'd watch any of those movies right now, except for maybe 7. But even then, I think I would.
And looking at that list, the only thing that I'm like, is it? Is I'm like, okay, is The Craft a better movie than Aliens?
I think we're just banking on nostalgia at this point. I think yeah, that's
right.
That's where it all falls in. It's like, no, as a film critic, no. Craft is not a better movie than Aliens. But yeah, it's just nostalgia once again reigning.
Well, that's what we're here for. Can we conjure any for a movie from the early 2000s? That is usually our nostalgia cutoff seems to, because like Stigmata, right. Stigmata was from 1999 and our nostalgia muscles were flexing.
Right.
But when we hit even the very early 2000s, we're like, yeah.
Do you think it's because like it's right like in the middle of like the whole any sort of special effects or CGI or anything like that? So like before that, like 80s, 90s, we all know it's terrible. We all know it's bad. We accept it. Sometimes we look forward to it. Now we've got really great CGI and special effects happening. But like in like the 2000s, like early 2000s, it's like, oh, my God, it's just kind of like cringe. Like, oh, I remember when it was like this and just like kind of cringeworthy, but not in an 80s way.
I think you're really onto something. You're so smart.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Not just a hat rack, my friend. Because that's kind of what I was thinking about as I was watching Hero.
Yeah, I remember when this was very impressive.
Right.
That's not now, but I see it and I'm like, oh yeah, okay, I see. As we discussed last week, I was surprised to remember this was on the list. I
Same.
Remember watching it. I remember loving it. I haven't thought about it since.
Right.
Same.
where are the two of you on this epic?
I remember
exactly the same.
Yeah.
And I was like, was it this one or was it House of Flying Daggers?
Right.
That was really good.
Or Crouching Tiger.
And I think the answer is all three. Everything that I was remembering that I was like, it has that really cool shot was in this movie. So now I'm like, what happens in House of Flying Daggers?
Yeah. Like, I remember seeing it in the theater and just being really impressed by the cinematography. And the only thing I remembered from this movie was the color palette, was that, right. You know, like the very intentional use of red and yellow and white and blue.
Those leaves, man. I'm more impressed with leaves here than I ever have been on screen before.
So those aren't all CGI leaves. So I got to thinking, what are those leaves made out of? Because they don't look plasticky, but they can't be real leaves. They'd get bruised and torn.
Like thin paper?
No, maybe they would fabric? Get crumpled.
Oh, yeah. It might be some sort of like fabric, like someone like
polyester leaves.
Sure.
Theatrical prop designers.
Yes.
Let us know about leaves. the fact that I'm supposed to be impressed by is that in Halloween, in John Carpenter's Halloween, set in Indiana in October or Illinois in October, filmed in California, they had to paint the leaves. There was someone individually dyeing the leaves to be fall colors.
Oh.
And you got to be going, this thing better hit. This better, people better see this.
Right?
Honestly, as a former high school set painter, I feel like that would just be so much fun. Just like, nature. I'm God now.
Well, I'll tell you what I didn't remember about Hero, the plot at all. It was brand new to me.
Is the thing. Yeah.
What's funny is I fell asleep watching it last night, and Dan this morning was like, oh, I've seen it several times. I had asked him, like, what happens at the end? And then he gives me, like, you know, Dan's cliff notes. And then I was like, and I was listening to it, and I'm like, and I was like, I'll go ahead and finish watching this last half hour. And as I'm watching it, he comes in, he's like, oh, that's not what I thought happened at all. It's like, I got these all wrong. Yep.
Well, let me kind of sort of tell you what happens in drastically abbreviated fashion, because it's my week to do the 60-second recap. Would someone like to time me?
Yep, go.
It's ancient China. The states are warring. Nameless, a great warrior, has an audience with the king because Nameless killed three assassins that have been after the king for years. The king asks how he managed it. Nameless says he knew that one assassin was cheating on another assassin with the third assassin, so he killed the side piece to play the couple off of one another. The king listens, but then says, nope, no way. They were too good to get played like that, and accuses Nameless of being the secret super assassin, who is actually working with the other three to get to the king. Nameless is like, nah, fair enough. I am here to kill you, but it's not like that. All three assassins are actually cool, and we're generally pretty chill about my plan. Also, one of the assassins used his calligraphy skills to convince me not to actually kill you because you can unite China. The king remains skeptical, but Nameless rushes the king to prove he can kill him, but he doesn't actually kill him, reminding him, hey, uniting China, good idea. For almost killing the king and laying down a total mindfuck, the king has Nameless killed with a million arrows, but then gives him a hero's burial and goes ahead and unites China. The end.
Couple seconds over, but you know, you had to say the same plot three times.
Totally worth it.
I thought I had made it too by like completely not trying to explain who these three assassins are.
Right.
Because like I know and I watched it, but you don't actually need to know, do you?
Not really. you didn't even like have to mention, you didn't mention the Zhang Ji, is that her name? The servant.
Ji Zhang. Yeah, so one of the things, I fell asleep before we were recording. I was 20 minutes late to this recording, audience, because I fell asleep on my couch. One of the things I planned to do was play a lot of these actors' names and and just some Chinese words. And I don't know how to say any of them. So apology for mispronouncing things.
Yeah.
And also not understanding the whole surnames and first names and which goes first, because sometimes you say the second name first and say the family name second, even though the family name is written first, and sometimes you don't, and I never know when.
Oh my God.
Why?
Yeah, blanket apologies all around. I know. Yeah. I know none of that.
Yeah, I was like, do I try to pronounce where the various provinces are? No, just we're going to say states are warring. And
yep.
Better to talk around it.
Yeah,
than to,
right.
butcher an entire culture's history. I'm not going to get into whether or not this is historically accurate either. I assume kinda. Let's right. leave it at that.
It does strike me as odd at not really knowing things about the history of China, where at the beginning they're like, there was a ruthless king.
Right.
And like they really set up like, oh, time to kill this guy. He's trying to conquer the world. And then at the end, they're like, but you should conquer the world. Just China, though.
Wink.
Yeah, the opening crawl, a little rambly. Like, it was philosophical, and then it was plot, and then there was more, like, it's like, okay, look, he's going to fight a bunch of people. It's going to look good. We're, like, right. You know.
This is what we're here for.
We're going to be okay.
Oh, what's funny yeah. is when I hit play, I was like, I feel like there's probably going to be some title card, like, some text to read beforehand. And sure enough, in the beginning, okay.
In a year that was surprisingly long ago, because it's an old country, things weren't great, but there was this guy. Here we go. What is, you know. Anyway. Yeah, I no mention at all of Zhang. Zhang, what did Robin say? What are we going with?
I think Ji Yi Zhang.
Okay.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that I was sitting here going, man, I love her. Why did I forget about her? She's great.
Yeah. And beautiful.
Where has she been?
I mean, odds are good that she's working in China, since that's as if not more lucrative than working in Hollywood at this point. But yeah,
there was definitely a moment where it was like, oh, she's going to be a huge crossover star.
Right.
Like, she's, you know, and that did not end up happening.
Well, largely because she was in all three of the movies that Camilla mentioned. She's in this right. and House of Flying Daggers and Crouching Tiger. So it's, you know, kind of a big run for her.
And then she was in Memoirs of a Geisha, mm-hmm. which I right. think was when they were, because like that's, I think, the first English language movie that she did. And that movie, aside from winning several Academy Awards in craft categories, does not exist.
What?
Like, do you remember that movie at all?
I do, but I don't know why. I was very excited about it. Like, I don't know why. Like, I made a purpose to read the book before I saw the movie, and I don't understand why I was kind of into it.
Because that book was also huge. It was like the book that was on the coffee table at the house where I babysat.
Yeah.
So like it was one of those. And I saw the movie and I have zero memory of it.
I remember the cherry blossoms. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty much that. You're right.
It deserved those craft Oscars.
Right. Apparently she was in the Godzilla movie a mere 2 years ago. Apparently she was in Godzilla King of the Monsters, which... Hey, that movie's not good. Like, I know Godzilla vs. Kong is fun, and we're pumped because, you know, it was the big, like, movie theaters are back. King of the Monsters is boring.
I liked it. I saw it in the theater on a Saturday morning with a bunch of children in the audience. They were cheering every time a new monster appeared. It was great.
That would help. That would help a whole lot. Let me tell you about Hero, because it's a damn mess. So let's get through it. And then, having done the other thing, I'll... just shut up for a while. Here's the easy part. Hero was released in North America on August 27th, 2004, made $17.8 million, easily beat the runner-up. The runner-up was the debuting Anaconda's The Hunt for the Blood Orchid. No memory that there was an Anaconda sequel.
What? No. And it came in second in North American box office?
What in the Sam?
Yep, $12.8 million.
That's insanity.
Yeah. No idea. If you had me guess five times which member of the original cast comes back, I would have no idea. I know John Voight got eaten by a snake in the first one.
I know J-Lo wouldn't have come back.
No, not then. We'll look it up later. Yeah, easily lost to Hero, which is the 27th number one movie of 2004. It was a two-weekend winner. It repeated the following weekend, one with $8.8 million. There were debuts, but they were a little weak, including Wicker Park and Vanity Fair, nothing that really hit. Late August, early September used to be and kind of still is a major dumping ground, so it didn't have a lot of competition. Stayed in the top 10 for 5 weeks, $53.7 million domestic, the 58th top grossing film of the year. This is all in spite of the fact that at that time, in August of 2004, this movie was 2 full years old. The platform release for Hero began in China on October 24th, 2002, it made $30 million U.S. in China alone, its non-North American total is more than $123 million. It was a massive global hit. It was nominated for Best Foreign Language Film at the 75th Academy Awards in March of 2003, still 18 full months before anyone in America could see the movie. It lost that Oscar to Nowhere in Africa. But yes, unless you... It was on DVD, and you could, like, call up your buddy in China and get him to send you the DVD. And other than that, it was completely unavailable and not yet released.
Interesting.
And so, why? What? Is Harvey Weinstein's fault? Like so many things.
Yeah, he's involved.
Yeah.
I mean, the confusing part is that they said they wanted to put distance between Hero and Crouching Tiger. Mm. Which, like, what? Don't you want to ride the coattails of a big hit?
Americans...
Maybe because that's not what a prestige indie studio does, which is why they never should have bought the rights for this movie. It's not theirs.
And it had, but it hadn't been that... Crouching Tiger started, you know, getting seen in America in, like, early 2001.
Mm. Right.
So even if they had released it fairly quickly after its Chinese release, it would have been nearly 2 years removed for Crouching Tiger. Like, that doesn't seem too soon.
You know, I what agree. Just, if anything, it would help.
You know what just happened at the top of the show? I couldn't remember the difference between Crouching Tiger, Hero, or the other one. And if these things were in, all three were in the theater at the same time or anywhere near, it'd be like, just mass confusion. So I am America.
Didn't this end up coming out close to House of Flying Daggers?
I'll skip ahead a little bit. Okay. Zhang Yimou, the director, obviously had very much moved on. House of Flying Daggers opened in the U.S. just over 3 months later, on December 3rd. They weren't going for the same thing. House of Flying Daggers is not a number one movie in America. It had a very slow platform release. I don't know that it was ever in the top 10. Hero, they were pushing as a hit. House of Flying Daggers, they were pushing as an indie thing. Mm-hmm. And House of Flying Daggers, by the way, also an Oscar nominee, but for Best Cinematography.
Oh, wow. Ooh.
It lost to, Robin?
The Aviator?
The Aviator, correct. Fine. The Aviator looked great. The other aspect of the delay, Miramax's whole thinking was, put the trailer for this on Kill Bill and everyone will want to see it. That was the plan all along. In fact, that was the plan before they split Kill Bill into two parts. So then it became, well, Kill Bill Volume 1 exists to sell tickets to Kill Bill Volume 2, so we're going to put the trailer for Hero on Kill Bill Volume 2.
Are you fucking kidding me? Get
back even further. Wow. Yeah.
Which is not as good of a pairing, because Kill Bill Volume 1, a good movie,
right,
is very much like this. Look at these awesome fights!
Right.
And then Kill Bill Volume 2... a mediocre movie is a slog.
Right.
And then when you leave it, you're not going to be like, remember that cool fight trailer that we saw before this slog? No. You're right. Going to be like, well, that was okay. Or arguing about whether or not it counts as its own movie, because no one leaves the theater happy after Kill Bill Volume 2.
Yeah, what's funny is like, there was a moment in Hero, one of the scenes that reminded me of the Crazy 88's fight.
When it switches to black and white.
Yeah, there's that too.
But, right. And I was like, I assume that when that happened in Kill Bill, it's a reference to old fighting movies. And so here it is not a reference to, or they're not riffing off Kill Bill. They are riffing off the source that Kill Bill is riffing off. That's how you have to operate when you watch things that remind you of Tarantino movies. But I don't know for sure.
I always assume that it was because of the amount of blood that was spilled that
yes.
for as part of like ratings. So if it's in black and white.
Yes, I've heard that, yeah.
And which was the same reason for why Psycho was in black and white.
Oh, I can't picture it in color other than if right. Gus Van Sant makes it. Like, I can't really, yeah. We've covered this. This
yes.
has been addressed. Tarantino did allegedly lobby very hard for Hero to get a big release. You know, even knowing that they had a potential hit, Miramax was still... you know, going to play it cool. And allegedly Tarantino pushed hard to get it everywhere to the point that it was marketed as Quentin Tarantino presents Hero. Despite what? That is an official like alternate title on the IMDb page. He did nothing but see it and then talk about it. which is all he ever does. This one just, you know, went farther.
It should say Robin Hitchcock presents every Charlize Theron movie.
Right. Sean Collier presents. No, watch Twin Peaks again.
What does Camila present?
I don't know. I'm lost. I'm over it. Sorry.
The bit has died.
Right. It's over. I killed it.
If you think of it later, let us know.
Gotcha.
By the way, I know you're wondering how many films, not in English, have been number one movies in America. I don't know. I can't find any chart that is that specific to movies that are not in the English language that were number one. I would have to look at all 1,400 of our entries and think, is that in English?
There are some,
yeah. Right? We just covered Apocalypto. We just had a number one movie in America, not in English. Demon Slayer Mugen Train, the anime that I mentioned a few weeks ago, is a number one, not in English. I've seen so many different claims for what Hero is. At one point, it was probably the fourth highest grossing domestic film. That's wrong. The fourth highest grossing film in North America, not in the English language, behind Life is Beautiful, made a little bit more money. Mm-hmm. Crouching Tiger made more money. The top of that list is The Passion of the Christ.
Oh, right.
Which is like, okay, do we count that Apocalypto?
Huh.
More of a flex than a language, but right. Whatever. In any case, it was definitely the first Chinese language film to top the North American box office. And because Life is Beautiful and Crouching Tiger were not number one movies in America, Hero might be the first foreign language number one movie in America, other than things that shouldn't really count, like Passion of the Christ. I'm guessing and might be wrong. Feel free to correct me. In any case, the fact that there was a Chinese language movie in 2004 with a star, Jet Li, but we're not talking about a giant A-list global, you know, recognizable to Peoria type star, was the number one movie in America for 2 weeks. You know, that's very significant 19 years or 17 years ago.
Yeah, I would say so.
I agree.
Well, those are the facts. How's this movie, guys?
It's pretty dope.
Yeah.
Like, my knock against it is just that it's a bit repetitive, you know, or like I kind of got to like get to reality already. You know? Like, enough of this. He said, she said. But every time people start fighting in this movie, I just become like saucer-eyed happy girl. So I really enjoyed it.
It is beautiful on all accounts. Like just the intentional color palettes and the set designs and the costuming and the fight choreography. Like, it's all gorgeous. I think it's just, there's just something about it that I'm not quite, that doesn't quite stick to the wall for me. I think it's just because I'm not typically a fan of like martial art movies or even just like Chinese, Asian cinema in general. Like, I haven't watched a lot of it. Anything that I've seen is like Americanized. So I think this is set in a more traditional Asian cinema film or storytelling, I believe.
I'm also super undereducated about Chinese cinema and Hong Kong cinema as well.
I mean, it's just like there's so many scenes, and I try to remember, like, is this just what we were doing in early 2000s, or is this a type of cinema that's happening? And like the wide eyed, like the freeze frame, like the stare, like the reaction shots are just like that. And like when
and Zi Zhang has 100% right. Like the most ridiculous reaction shot faces.
Right.
Like, it's very like soap opera acting.
Yes, it's it's very close to like, you know, a telenovela. And then there's like the dude that's furiously calligraphying, like with the wind blowing in his hair.
Like, intense calligrapher. It reminded me of the broom dance in Breakin'.
Ladies and gentlemen, there it is, the world's first Hero to Breakin' connection that has never been attempted successfully achieved by Robin Hitchcock here today.
Oh, do not try this at home, kid. She is a professional.
He certainly shows off. I can see, it is very obvious to see why Quentin Tarantino is excited about this movie.
Right.
Because there's so many shots that are like, what can I, you know, what's the most important thing for these 8 seconds? The rain. You know, what's the most important thing now? This old guy walking slowly. You know, it's so directorly in so many of his moments that you can see why it had this big appeal to, you know, slightly showy filmmakers. Mm. That said, like, it didn't annoy me. It didn't annoy me the way that a lot of, you know, overly involved director stuff will, because it was just usually cool looking. Right. It was usually cool looking and interesting to stare at.
I think the only thing that annoyed me was that the subtitles were moving a little fast in some parts that, and I kept missing things. And I was kind of annoyed by that. But yeah, like the old guy when the first two are fighting at the chess match and the dude's like, play your song. And then he like walks through.
Yeah.
And we watch him walk across the courtyard and then he sets up and then he starts to play. And then dudes are like, and then the story goes is that, you know, they're sitting there imagining what their fight is going to be while he's playing the music. It's like,
but
wow.
Then there's the really cool right. shots of the instrument breaking. Right. It's like,
it's like, what? What is happening right now?
I mean, on principle, plus 3 points for pausing your fights to ask an old guy to play better fighting music. For
right.
You. Like, yeah. Right.
Like, exactly. It's like, of course. Like, how am I need to be in a certain mood, sir. So, excuse me. Let's hold off on this sword play for a second. I need to get my bop on.
There's, I would say, the only complaint I, and when I say complaint, I'm like, this takes it from an all-timer down to like just very, very good. Mm-hmm. The first third of the first telling of the story, everything is so cool that I'm just dazzled.
Yeah.
And in the second telling of the story, the like badass quotient goes up a lot. Mm. You know, that's where Zhang cuts off a little tiny bit of her hair. And then she's like, well, if you want to die, I'll assist you. It's like, yes. And the third time, I check out a little bit. Well, like, yeah. That third go around.
Part of the problem is that the romance between Snow and Sky, I think I've got those character names right.
I think that's right. Or is it Broken Sword?
A lot. And I say this as a lover of impossible romances, but I feel a little bit like they are asking you to buy into it more than the movie has earned, in part because those actors have done famous romance movies together in the
past. Really?
Huh. So, like, they're both in those two really famous Wong Kar-wai movies, Chungking Express and In the Mood for Love, neither of which I have seen. Again, I have huge gaps in my Chinese cinema history.
Man, there's a Wong Kar-wai moment happening because that gigantic Criterion set came out. And I've heard so many people talking about Wong Kar-wai so authoritatively. Like, since we love film, we have hours of things to say about Wong Kar-wai. And I'm like, I think I saw Chungking Express in college.
I was like, I haven't seen either of them. And I'm like, did I watch Chungking Express in college? I know that we talked about watching it in college.
There were 5 minutes where I nearly bought that set in cash because I was like ashamed. I was like, yes! I missed something big.
They're beloved movies. And I do think that it's kind of like when Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan show up and you've got mail, they have goodwill built in.
Yeah.
Right. Well, let's schedule a Wong Kar-wai night.
Okay.
sometime so we can get over this particular shame. But yeah, that third round, we're really into the trenches of both their relationship and the layers of shifting intentions of each character. And it's like, we know some badass shit's going to happen at the end, which is only in like 15 minutes. So could we just press on a little bit here?
Which is like this. It's like playing, what is it? The full card Monty? Full Monty? Like the card Monty. We're just doing a lot of switcheroo around. And I do enjoy, I like that sort of like that kind of way of the storytelling. It's like, okay, so this is what happened. And then he's like, bullshit. And he's like, okay, you're right. This is what happened. And he's like, nah, I'm still not buying it. Okay, you got me. This is what happened. So I kind of find some enjoyment in that, as well as for whatever reason, like what's more, even though I enjoyed most of it, I'm most taken with are the scenes with Nameless and the King for some reason. And I'm not sure why. I don't know.
I think part of it is that Jet Li's a superstar, right? Like, he is impossible not to be into when he's on screen.
Yeah, but he's just like so still. Like everything is so still. Maybe that's it. Like there's so much like still emotion and story being exuded from what's going on as he's just sitting there still, not even looking at looking dude in the eyes.
Yeah. I also just want to throw in, because somebody's already tweeted at me, that Maggie Cheung is not in Chungking Express. Just in the Mood for Love.
Did you just tweet something just now?
No. I mean, like, whoever's listening to episode in the future, when this episode is available to listen to, is like, Robin.
If anyone could tweet in real time without us knowing that it happened, it's Robin. But I like the first version best. I know that we're building towards one of understanding, but man, that first story, which hinges on, hi, couple assassins. I killed the guy that she cheated on you with. He said she could kick my ass. Didn't mention you, though. Bye. Like, oh.
Right.
So good.
That's good stuff.
Also, that scene with all the arrows and people just happily calligraphying.
It's like, basically, if you believe it, the power of calligraphy will save you. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you people? It's like, and they're like, you're right.
Also,
okay.
It just felt like a metaphor for life under late capitalism.
What bothered me was like, I got the message, I got the moral, but then like they're doing it in their little sandboxes. Like if there were ever a time to use the paper, it's now. Like write the symbol for they're shooting us with arrows.
These might be your final words. Why would you want them blown away in sand?
Good scene, though. Good. And when they're both fighting off the arrow, oh, it's great. It's great. Well, should we rate it? I'm very curious to see where this is going to go.
Yeah.
Let's.
Oh, yeah. Oddly enough, I had zero notes. I made no notes about this.
Me too. Zero notes.
Just the usual. Much
it's
less
harder
than usual.
When there's subtitles.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it an 84. It's really good. And if I were a little more engaged in that back half, it would be threatening, you know, the highest scores I've given. But still, it's very good. Robin?
That's almost exactly how I feel. Just a few notches lower, I'm going to give it a 79.
And same how I feel, just a few notches lower, 76.
Always nice to end by climbing down the ladder, just muting our reaction a little bit. 79 and 2/3 is your overall score. Won't mess up that rundown of the top 10 that I just went through, but very close to that. I mean, we're on a good run here.
You actually talked me up several points, you guys.
At some point I was like, am I giving this a 90? Like, yeah. I was in the, like, basically, we all kind of agree that the first half is the best part.
Right.
And so in that realm, I was like, is this going to be in the 90s?
Right.
I am loving every second of this.
Well, we're on a good run. Freaky, 72 and 2/3. The Craft, 82 and 1/3. Hero, 79 and 2/3. That's good. Can we keep it up? We'll find out. You know, never assume. Never assume around here. 2, the bingo card.
Someone drawing.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Many someones.
Bingo.
That's a bingo.
Yay!
Already?
Yeah.
Did you have a bingo this year?
Is this the year?
At the end of last year.
Didn't Sean and I do a...
You had a dual bingo with Sean.
Oh, okay.
I don't think you've had an individual bingo.
No, in 2021.
Oh, I guess not.
Then I think you just get a veto.
Sweet.
And it's the only veto in play. So
all right.
You have
good thing we got one.
Yes, thank you. I feel safer.
Right.
It was a muted reaction at the time, but Rango to Hero is probably going to be the best veto in history.
Yeah, well,
we'd
so.
Have to really, you know, go from Transformers 3 to Jurassic Park to prove upon that. I don't know. Maybe Rango's good. It was nominated for an Oscar.
It won Best Animated Feature.
You said that on this very show.
And you refuse to learn because it doesn't sound right.
No, it really doesn't. Well, it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. We're watching movies. Here's some other ones, Robin.
Okay. It's harder when we go 2 weeks in between because it's like, what did I all watch? The one new to me movie, which I saw, was FX. Have you guys heard of this movie or vaguely remember this? It is... like late 80s,
yeah,
maybe a couple first years of the 90s, and it's a movie effects guy is hired by the feds to fake an assassination of a mafia guy, but then they turn on him and twists and turns and lots of improvised movie effects. Brian Dennehy is in it as a grizzled cop on the trail of the movie effects guy.
Always.
Listen, just watch this movie. It is delightful.
I don't think I ever knew what it was actually about. I know I remember seeing it at Blockbuster, but not knowing.
Right. I also remember because it's F/X, yeah. And I remember that title being compelling. Anyway, finally watched it. Totally recommend it. Also, apparently there was a sequel, which is on our list.
What?
That's what I was looking into. I was like, yeah. I feel like this is a number one movie in America. No, FX2, The Deadly Art of Illusion from 1991 is a number one movie in America. FX was 1986, so a little earlier than you thought.
We were just greenlighting everything in the 90s, huh?
Hey, it worked. It was number one movie in America.
Right.
Orion Pictures felt that it could have performed even better with a different title.
Yeah, The Deadly Art of Illusion is a little weird.
No, the original FX. They thought F/X was a misstep.
Somebody somewhere called it Fix.
Robin, this is why you have to start. Now, I resisted for so long, for so much of my life, I resisted. And now I'm like, Robin, this is why you have to start being diligent about your letterbox.
Yeah, man.
So that when we get to this, you just look at what did I watch?
You're absolutely right. And that was like my one year, my resolution for the new year was to keep up with my movie spreadsheet. And I haven't.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm on Letterboxd if you want to. I'm not reviewing things because like that's work.
Right.
I'm not going to do, you know, you got to, somebody has to at least theoretically be paying me something. I wish that were true, but I'm not putting reviews on. I'm just logging everything I see. And if you want to know, you can follow me at Sean Collier and see, oh, he's watching more Universal Monster movies and giving them all 4 stars. So FX though, that's a good recommendation. Camila, what do you got?
It's not a lot. Like I half watched a couple movies that I didn't care to go back to. The Woman in the Window. I pretty much called it like 15 minutes into the movie, then fell asleep another 15 minutes later. Dan told me you were right. And so I didn't need to go back. And then I watched Tom Clancy's Without Remorse. I watched that with a lot of remorse. I finally saw I Care a Lot, which was great.
I like that movie so much. And like, every minute I was like, why do I like this? This seems bad, but I like it.
It's amazing. I had so many feelings after that. Like, I was so angry about the system. I was like, you can do that? Like, this is something that happens. I was so pissed off at that character and the system throughout this entire movie. It was crazy because I started it at like 9 o'clock, stayed awake for the whole damn thing, and was awake for another hour because I had so many feelings. So, yeah. This point in my life, that's how I can tell it's a good movie, if I stayed awake for the whole thing.
What do you think about that Golden Globes RIP designation as a comedy?
What?
Roz Pike won Best Actress in a Comedy at the final Golden Globes.
Dude, that's not even a dark comedy. Like, I wouldn't even categorize that. No, none. And I do want to give it up for Peter Dinklage, though. Like, his character.
He's so good.
God, mwah, chef's kiss, Peter. Any and everything you do. Yeah, that's pretty much. Oh, Dan talked me into watching Strictly Ballroom from 1992.
I loved that movie. I don't really remember it, but I remember loving it.
I mean, had I watched it in 92, I probably would have liked it much better, but I'm not.
I watched it in 92.
I'm not really into Baz Luhrmann and his style. And yeah. It just made me want to watch Shall We Dance with J-Lo and Richard Gere. So I did. So that's my, it's my roundup of anything. I could just recommend I Care a Lot if you haven't seen it yet. I know I'm late, but yeah.
Camila Adams presents I Care a Lot.
There it is.
I was thinking Camila Adams presents Tom Hardy, if anything, but I mean, it's...
I will not go on for 20 minutes about the David Lynch weekend at the Mahoning Drive-In, although I could. I just know that would just be, for me, it was a magical, wonderful time. I have watched Twin Peaks. I mean, I know everyone has this, and Camila has had this with 50 different people. I've just watched Twin Peaks so much that it is so weird to talk to people who are on Twin Peaks. Like, it is so... I met several, and they were all great. Dana Ashbrook, Harry Goaz particularly, were so nice. And Charlotte Stewart as well, who both was in Twin Peaks, and more importantly, was in Eraserhead. They were all so great and so charming. And because I'm so familiar with them, I just walk up and start chatting with them like it's a friend. And then I get a flash of sweat, like, oh my God. And then it goes back again because I'm like, yeah, this person that I've looked at for hours on hours on end. It's so weird.
He's got this flop sweat all of a sudden and turned bright red.
You know, as much as I talk about the drive-in, there is one and only one thing preventing me from becoming a real true drive-in person. Those people don't sleep. I don't understand it. There was so much like hoopla around Saturday night. Saturday night was Twin Peaks Firewalk with me and Mulholland Drive. And there was so much other stuff, long Q&A, concert, surprise for the Mulholland Drive fans. A surprise appearance from Rebecca Del Rio singing Yorondo.
Holy crap!
No. I know. Okay, now I am talking about it. Because I didn't know what was happening, but I felt it. There was a band on, you know, a David Lynch songs band. This is a thing that exists all over. It's like a little band that gets together to play all of the songs in David Lynch movies. And they were good. They were very good. And then they did a thing, you know, they wrapped up and there was an announcement that thanked them. And it was in the voice of the guy at Club Silencio. And they said, and now Rebecca Del Rio. But like, it was very like ambiguous as to what was literally happening. And I just hear someone start singing. And at first, she sounds exactly the same. So I'm like, they're playing a recording. But I could feel that it was more than that. And I got out of my car and wandered to the front of the lawn.
It's like pulling you towards her.
And even then, I'm like, is this really her? Because it's... And then at the end, I'm like, no, this is happening in the place where I'm in. Like, I lost my mind. Anyway...
Rightfully so, man. Like I wouldn't even, I'm not even like anywhere near you on Twin Peaks, David Lynch, but that right there, her singing Yorondo in person, yikes. I wouldn't even know how to react.
Agreed.
I went up to her and bought a little, it's like a little hand mirror with her on the back. And she was like, my stuff didn't arrive. Just give me your information and it'll be sent. So now I have an email in my inbox that's like, hi, this is Rebecca Del Rio. Thank you very much. Like, this is so great.
Yeah. I don't remember anything from that movie other than that, her singing that song.
It's definitely the coolest part of the movie in a very cool movie.
And I recall, like, again, not even at the moment watching the movie, not knowing what's going on, but being brought to tears by the her singing that song.
So all of this happens and we watch Fire Walk With Me, which is 2 hours and 20 minutes long. Mary Beth enters the costume contest. Great costume contest. And then it's like, OK, here's Mulholland Drive. It's 1:15 a.m. And I'm like, we're going back to the hotel. I'm sorry.
You have to start your events at dusk in the summer. You have a problem.
No, it was great. If you're within 10 hours driving of the Mahoning Drive-In, just look at their calendar. They're going to have a weekend for you, and it's going to be great. The question is, now do I go into a rant about Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead? Because I have one.
An abbreviated rant?
Yeah. You want to have 30 seconds on the clock? 60 seconds on the clock?
Give me 30 seconds, and then I'm going to yell about a thing after the 30 seconds.
All right, go.
I want to like this because it's fun, and we're fighting zombies in Las Vegas, and it's a good time. There's a zombie Siberian tiger walking around. I'm on board. Unfortunately, all of your bullshit came with you. It's too long. It's too slow motion and gritty and not fun and bleak and annoying, and everyone is motivated by their wife or mother dying. There are so many dead wives, girlfriends, and missing parents.
Oh, wow. Okay.
This is the thing I was going to yell. The king of the zombies. Yeah, there's a loose structure among the zombies in this movie. The king of the zombies. What could his motivation be? Could it be that he's a zombie and wants to eat people? No, the good guys kill his zombie girlfriend who was pregnant with a zombie baby.
Stop.
Because that's the only thing that he can think of that motivates people.
Oh my God.
Oh my Lord.
Oh my God. Bush League.
Yeah.
Listen. If they're going to send a nuclear weapon in 20 minutes and the zombie king is angry because of his dead zombie baby inside his zombie girlfriend, and you're looking to find your estranged daughter, and there's been two double crosses, there's just too much shit going on. Just streamline it a little bit.
Yeah, it's like, Coco Chanel said, like, before you leave the house, take off one accessory. Before you hit send, take out one of those plot points.
I don't know if I'll give it a good review or not. I don't know, because hey, at the end of the day, there's the zombie tiger. Fine, we're good. Tig Notaro was great. My actual recommendation is for Shiva Baby. Shiva Baby is fantastic. It was the first movie I saw in a movie theater in more than 400 days. So I was going to love it no matter what. But man, that movie's good. Funny, tense, relatable. Oh, it's so good. And it's streaming now. You can watch it from home.
I looked up Anacondas 2, whatever it's called. None of the original cast returns.
What?
That's fair.
Yeah, that is fair.
What was Ice Cube doing? I mean, that was not exactly the peak for him.
I think that that might have been a good time for Ice Cube's film career.
Yeah, that may have been like the Are We There Yet or something.
Right, exactly.
So again.
I mean, creatively, not a great time for Ice Cube's film career.
Financially?
Business and money-wise?
On point.
He was doing okay.
Yeah.
Well, will we land on an Ice Cube movie right now? I don't know, because I don't know what this movie is. The movie is Fire Down Below from 1997. Anybody?
I have never heard of that.
1997.
It's Steven
Seagal.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, snap. Let's do it. You know what? I love how these movies just kind of seamlessly connect. There's at least one thing that connects each movie that we come to. Like in order, like back to back, except maybe The Craft and Hero.
Well, that was we messed with.
Right, that's right. So originally it was Rango.
Yeah. Speaking of not really remembering movies from the 90s, does anyone else remember the Dustin Hoffman movie Hero?
I remember seeing the cover art.
Yeah, it was like he rescued people from a plane crash, I think. Anyway.
Okay.
It exists. And when we first drew Hero last week, I was like, the Dustin Hoffman plane crash movie?
I am just double checking that this was a number one and isn't a weird Box Office Mojo thing, because I find it hard to believe.
Really? Steven Seagal, 97? Come on, that's a hot spot. That's
in a dead zone of whatever calendar, I would go see Fire Down Below.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I'm pumped about Fire Down Below. Yeah, number one movie in America, September 5th. Yeah, it's that same dead zone we were just talking about. Yep. I hope you got the horses in the back, because the beginning of this Wikipedia is the film also includes cameos by country music performers Randy Travis, Mark Colley, Ed Bruce, Marty Stewart, and Travis Tritt, and country rocker and the band member Levon Helm, as well as Kris Kristofferson in a supporting role. Wow. What could this be? Man, is this his 10 years later response to Roadhouse? What is... Oh, I am curious.
Yeah. It's funny because the cover art makes me believe that it's like some sort of, what do they call it, smoke chasers or something, or like he's
a
firefighter of sorts or somebody. I don't know.
That's
what the cover art makes me believe.
He plays an EPA agent who investigates a Kentucky mine and helps locals stand up for their rights.
What? We'll talk about this next week. Steven Seagal's relationship to the environment is very confusing.
Please let this be no action. Let this be his one.
It's Dark Water. Starring Steven Seagal.
Yeah, Dark Water. I was about to say, what's the one with Mark Ruffalo from 2 years ago where he's just like trying to convince people in West Virginia to sue? Right. Steven Seagal. Oh, man, I'm overjoyed. We could have landed on Jurassic Park, and I wouldn't be as happy as I am now.
I'm going to remind
before we figure out why Levon Helm is in this movie, the number one movie in America on August 27th, 2004 was, as discussed, Hero. What was the number one song in America that weekend?
Is that August?
Yeah, end of August.
Usher?
No.
Snoop Dogg?
No. We're in the right section. We're in the right aisle at the CD store, which was still a thing then.
Sort of.
Outkast?
No. What's tricky about this, when we get to it, you'll be like, oh yeah, it's a massive hit. But you may not recognize the artist name, because it is not really known under this name. Was that a hint?
Tipsy?
Not at all.
Sort of?
Tipsy?
Think of big hit party singles in the hip hop.
Is it Eminem and his boys? D12?
No, But we are looking for a thing like D12. We are looking for another rap collective. I say rap collective, and many people floated through this apparently from my research yesterday. But the two biggest ones are at either end. The two biggest ones at the very end, a young upstart named DJ Khaled was involved for just a minute. And at the very beginning, in the last few months of Big Pun's life, he was associated with
something mafia or fuck.
You're thinking of 3-6 Mafia, which is a different thing.
This is like Big Pun and Fat Joe. And
Fat Joe is the person you think this song is by. It is actually by the collective, which is called the Terror Squad.
Did not
but
know that.
Really, Fat Joe is the rapper on this hit.
Yeah, did not know that.
What is this song? I feel I'm like, do I know this song?
It's
for Lean Back. Surely you
Lean
remember.
Back. Oh. Okay. Yes, I know Lean Back.
Yeah, I do know that song. Not that well, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fat Joe and one of the other guys in the Terror Squad are the performers on it, but it absolutely, you would just think it's a Fat Joe song.
Yeah. Would I?
if you would think that far, which you might be like, yeah, I know the sentence that is the crux of that song.
Two-word sentence.
Right.
Coincidentally, also the title.
Number one.